Bischoff here, along with my buddy Tom DeShane. We're going to be breaking down Money in the Bank. But before we get started, I'm not going to lie. Tom and I were talking briefly before we hit record for this episode, and I think we're both of the same mind that we're not really sure what we saw or for sure how to talk about it in the sense of story and structure and character and arcs and mythology and literature and Shakespeare. I don't know, Tom, what do you think Shakespeare would have thought of this?
Oh, gosh. I think Shakespeare would have been a little confused, probably like you and I were. I know I was coming into this really expecting an action-packed match that was going to, you know, use the cinematography and the excitement of this really cool setting to create something unique. But it left me a little unsatisfied. It felt like it was a little schizophrenic. One minute it was action-packed. The next minute there were strange cameos from Doink the Clown and Brother Love, which I do have to say that did bring a smile to my face. But yeah, it just felt like a very strange match. It went off the air way before I was expecting it to. I look forward to kind of hearing your feedback and discussing this, talking this through and trying to make sense of what we just saw. So,
well,
yeah.
I'm going to try to treat this seriously for just a few minutes. And when I say that, I want to make sure people that are watching this don't misunderstand me. Look, clearly the WWE made a decision not to take this pay-per-view seriously.
Right.
I mean, that was straight up. This was in your face sitcom. As I'm watching this or comedy, as I'm watching this, I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to be talking to Tom about this. And he's a filmmaker. He's a literature guy. He knows history. He knows all this stuff. What can I see in this that I can ask him about in terms of how it relates to possibly any classic literature? And it wasn't, you know, I the only movie I could think of was like the Hangover trilogy, you know, because, you know, it was intense in some spots, like you said, but it was slapstick comedy in others.
Yeah.
And I think that was clearly a decision that was made for whatever reason. It was made to treat this as more as entertainment and with a wink and a nod towards the comedic side of entertainment, as opposed to a serious storyline or something that, you know, you could take real seriously.
Yeah, you know, this going in, I was really excited because we knew we're getting a journey story. Okay, this is going to be a plot that would fall into that journey category. And when you look at a three-act structure for your traditional journey films, act one, you have to really make sure that your audience understands what is the intent, meaning what is the goal, and then the motivation, which is the why. Why is this goal important? And I think that the WWE did a pretty good job over the last several weeks. I think it was back on the SmackDown on April 17th, so less than a month ago, where they decided they were going to have this climb the corporate ladder, Money in the Bank, climb 10 stories through the building from the lobby to the rooftop to claim this trophy. So, you know, we know what the goal is. That's the goal. What's the motivation? Why are these people in this match? Well, we know they're in this match because if they get the Money in the Bank ladder match, they'll be able, or briefcase, they'll be able to challenge their brand's champion to a match at any time, any place throughout the year. So we understand the basics going into this. And I think what the WWE did a really good job about in the weeks leading up to this was really building that anticipation. I haven't felt this for a while where I wasn't quite sure what to expect. Now, as you and I have said, we were probably let down a little bit by what we got. But if we rewound like an hour ago, I was coming into this match saying, what could happen here? I have no clue. I'm ready to go on this journey. And, you know, when you think about the way they built this up with their vignettes over the last few weeks, Baron Corbin gave a great promo in the last few days talking about, well, Otis might get stuck in the elevator and maybe I'm going to throw Ray off the roof. And it's like, holy cow, what could happen? It almost reminded me of, and you know, maybe I'm a little bit embarrassed to admit this, but back when I was a kid, when it was announced for SummerSlam 1992, that Kamala, the Ugandan giant, was going to face off against the Dead Man, the Undertaker. I remember hearing that. I was away at our family's camp. I was probably about 10 years old watching the television. And when I heard that news, I had to go running out of the house, running onto the beach, and about half a mile away, tracking down my dad and saying, Dad, the Undertaker's going to fight Kamala. Can you believe this? What's going to happen? One guy's a dead man. The other is a savage from the jungles. What's going to happen with Kim Chi and Harvey Wimpleman on the outside? Will Kamala hit the splash from off the top rope? Will the Undertaker be able to get him up for a tombstone? It was the way that Gene Okerlund not only introduced that match in the event center that he announced it, but it was the way that he built it up. What could happen? And it was all those exciting what ifs that got me so excited for that match. And I don't know if I've necessarily had that feeling again since then, until just recently, building up to this match. Anything could have happened. And I think I was a little bit let down by what ultimately happened. We'll go through the breakdown here momentarily, but I feel like there was so much potential, so much opportunity, so much within the WWE's control to craft a really, really great journey story. And I'm not sure if we got that. Now, as we talked about, Act One is all about really identifying what that intent is, what the motivation is, and ultimately posing the question, you know, who will be victorious? What will happen by the end? Now, if we jump to Act Three of a three-act structure for a journey story, Act Three is all about, well, what was the answer? Who won? What happened? And so Act Two, that's all the fun stuff in the middle. That's the twists, the turns, the excitement. It's really one of those things where, you know, if you compare it to a roller coaster, Act One is you're kind of going up that first hill. Act Three is when you're come screeching into a halt at the end of the roller coaster. But Act Two is all the fun stuff. It's all the ups and downs and twists and turns and speed ups and slowdowns. And what the WWE chose to do with their Act Two, I found, was really, really lackluster. Now, in a minute, I'd love to talk a little bit about the difference between, under the banner of a journey story, you have an adventure story, an adventure plot, but you also have a quest plot. And those have a lot of similarities. They fall under that journey banner, but there's one thing that really kind of differentiates them. Before I dive into that, though, what did you think of the overall pacing of the match, of Act One, the build-up to the match, then the match itself, and then three, the kind of lackluster ending that maybe caught you off guard like it caught me off guard? I wasn't expecting the two winners that won to win.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, before we get to that, you know, it's hard to really break down the pacing because it was all over the place, and it just... I don't know. It's hard. It's hard for me to break it down as a match, but I want to go back to anticipation, the good buildup that it had and the anticipation that it had, and then switch over to perhaps why we were disappointed, or at least speaking for myself. I agree with you. They did do a great job, you know, building anticipation. One of the things I like about the Money in the Bank match is it inherently there's stakes that you understand. And I think WWE and just about anybody could, you know, that's producing wrestling right now could do a much better job with establishing stakes and making the belt, the championship, whatever you want to call it, whatever organization you're in, making that world championship actually mean something. Because today, what is it? What does the world championship really represent? It doesn't really represent anything tangible, at least in the way it's promoted. Yes, if you're the world champion, it's presumed that you make more money than anybody else. But why not talk about that?
Right.
You know, in a big prize fight, everybody, the first thing they talk about is the purse.
Right.
And that makes, you know, fighting worth it, for crying out loud. But in professional wrestling, for some reason, we've gotten away from that. And now you have all these various titles, and they don't really, they mean a lot. And honestly, in real life, okay, in real life, becoming the world champion of WWE is a very, very big damn deal. It means most likely tens of millions of dollars to you, potentially, over the course of your career, if you're worthy of reaching that spot and you're consistent in your performances and you can hold on to that high level position for 5, 10, 15 years. You know, Randy Orton, you know, there's tens and tens and tens of millions of dollars, but they don't talk about that. It's kind of like, sure, no, we're going to talk about money anymore. We can't keep that a secret because we don't like it when people talk about what our talent's being paid. So I wish they would make the world championships, the world titles mean more to the average viewer so that the stakes are inherent and they're relatable. And then the Money in the Bank, you know, now that you know, we know who's got him. Now having that briefcase with that contract in it that you can pull out anytime you want when the opportunity's right for you, that now it really means a lot. But anyway, I digress. I think one of the other things that in terms of disappointment, I think I allowed myself to raise my own expectations based on Firefly Funhouse and Boneyard match. And when I heard there was going to be more cinematic matches and Money in the Bank was going to be shot in a similar fashion, my anticipation and expectations went right up accordingly. Yeah. And they didn't. It was not the same thing. So in terms of the pace, the second act, you know, okay, it was cute. Dark the Clown, Bruce Pritchard. You know, I love seeing Bruce, you know, the little shot at Paul Heyman, you know, sitting at a banquet, you know, food fight. But once they did that, I was completely unplugged. There was no way that I could pay attention to it in any kind of a serious fashion. I could pay attention to it and see what kind of gag they were going to pull next. Vince McMahon in his office, by the way, did you see that big Tyrannosaurus Rex skull?
Yeah. Is that real?
That's a shoot, brother.
Wow. Holy cow.
That's a shoot. I notice here that for whatever reason, we are recording, but our audio seems to be frozen. So this is going to end up being a audio Patreon show.
All right.
Apologize for that. I'm going to have to beef up my Wi-Fi system, I'm afraid, at some point here. But so let's break it down. What do you got? What are your notes, Tom?
Yeah, so my notes, again, kind of coming into this was to determine, all right, we know this is going to be a journey story. Is it going to be an adventure story or is it going to be a quest story? A quest story, it didn't seem very likely unless someone like Dana Brooke won, because what makes the difference between a quest story and an adventure story is in a quest story, something like The Grapes of Wrath, Wizard of Oz, you know, Gilgamesh, these are all great quest stories where it's really more about the hero, about the protagonist, and how they evolve and how they change based on the trials they go through over the journey. So even though they're questing for something in you know, this type of quest story, it's not ultimately really that final thing that they get that's important. It's how they've changed. And when I looked at all the competitors going into the match, Dana Brooke was really the only one that had a potential to go into this match and come out of it with a major arc, because she was going in as an underdog. Even Carmella was telling her, you know, we need to be focusing more on our tag team aspirations because you're not going to win Money in the Bank. I thought this was an opportunity that if a character like Dana Brooke actually won, she would have gone on that journey, because she's proven now to herself and to her fellow competitors that she can do this and she is worthy. And then it would have been an interesting story to see how she, with this renewed confidence, would go after her brand's championship. Now, the other kind of story, the other kind of journey story, beside the quest story, where again, it's all about the character's development, is an adventure story. And where that, what that is, it's basically just the opposite. You still go on this major quest, there's still an end goal, but the action is more important than any sort of character. These are your stories like Indiana Jones or James Bond, where, you know, it's Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom or the Last Crusade or the, you know, Raiders of the Lost Ark and whatnot. Indy is going to be the same at the beginning of the story as he is at the end. He's not going to evolve or change just like James Bond, but you are going to go on a crazy ride, and that's where the action is more exciting. And that became very clear to us, I think, early on, that this was going to fall more into the adventure story rather than the quest story if we're looking at plot lines. But yeah, I mean, right out the gate, I feel like our logic was challenged when, you know, the women are in the lobby getting ready to start. Asuka is nowhere to be seen. And then we look up, Asuka's already on the second floor. Rather than taking advantage of that lead and just continuing to run up, she's already got a one floor lead over the girls. Instead, she jumps on the other women competitors. Then she rides the elevator up, and somehow, you know, 20 minutes later, she's still only on like floor three. Again, that really took me out of the action and the excitement. And again, I feel like, too, the WWE, you know, set up what the rules were to begin with, but then very quickly changed the rules, where it was initially supposed to start out with everyone starting in the lobby, whereas instead the men started out in the weight room. And yeah, from there, it just, you know, got very strange, very weird. We saw people break off into their different clusters. We got those cameos. Perhaps the one that took me out of it the most was Stephanie McMahon walking by the conference room. Dana Brooke is in there. She thinks she's won the Money in the Bank. She hasn't. It's just a prop in the Money in the Bank conference room. And she's pointing out how, you know, Nia Jax is there on the floor drooling. I mean, Nia is your monster. I was expecting Nia to come in and really roughhouse tonight. And Stephanie just walked by nonchalant, told Dana to clean up the room and make sure she cleans up all that drool from Nia. Funny, but not really, again, worthy, I think, for a title match, to your point, or at least a title shot. Yeah, what, of all the different cameos, Eric, which one was probably the least welcome for you? Was it Vince? Was it Doink? Was it Stephanie? Was it Paul? Was it Bruce? There might have been one or two others. The guy who was, you know, sweeping up the floor with the wet, wet mop that Dana Brooke slipped and fell on. Which one felt maybe the most out of place, or the one that you probably would have cut if you were producing this match?
I think for me, Doink. Just because unless you've been a fan for 20 years,
yeah,
you don't get that. You're not getting that at all. And I think the WWE has done a great job of really building their younger demo over the last 10 or 15 years. But that suggests to me that if indeed they've done as great of a job as I think they have, then a lot of the people that are watching the show tonight didn't really get that character. And I guess the same could be said for Brother Love, but Pritchard's been getting himself over with his podcast for the last couple of years. And he's made some appearances, much like Doink has, I guess, but Pritchard and Brother Love has made some, you know, cameos in recent, right, you know, specials on USA or SmackDown. So that was the one that didn't work for me. The one I liked the best, it had to be Vince in his office, because right, it's a, you know, if you don't know, this is a little thing you only know if you know, right? And you only know if you know if you've worked there. But you know, Vince has got this thing, like when you go to when you're in his office for a meeting, or if you're in any meeting, and you get up from the desk, and you slide your chair out and you get up to leave, you know, it's like a pet peeve that, you know, you got to put that chair back, and if you don't, you're going to hear about it. So I thought that was pretty interesting. Of course, I love the Tyrannosaurus Rex or whatever the hell it was, that dinosaur head on the wall. This just made me chuckle.
That one
I kind of liked, and I liked, you know, once I embraced the slapstick, you know, comedic nature of it, and didn't, you know, argue with myself about it and get upset with it, or disappointed by it, I should say. I liked the little interplay between Daniel Bryan and AJ once it was over outside of Vince's office. I thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah, and I'll give him that too. I agree. It was funny and it was creative. It just wasn't quite what I expected. You know, to your point earlier, a championship match, a championship opportunity is something that used to be held in really high regard back in the day in WCW and WWE. And it's something that, again, going into this match, they had built to feel really special and really important. So yeah, the comedy felt out of place, but yeah, I'd lie if I said I didn't pop seeing Vince on the screen. I didn't know if he would make a cameo, him and his hand sanitizer and whatnot. The Stephanie one for me, I feel like, you know, again, just kind of almost speaking down to the women in the middle of this intense match to clean up the room, you know, just the shift in power. It just felt like a strange delivery. Paul Heyman, you know, I did get a bit of a snicker out of the fact that, you know, the men and the women ran into each other in front of him, and he had the chance to stand up and say, ladies and gentlemen, you know, to prompt himself. But again, the tone was just, was so off for me. I thought there were a lot of little hints, too, of things that might pay off later on. For example, with Baron Corbin breaking the mirror, he stops and pauses to say, oh no, you know, like, what have I done? 7 years of bad luck here. But that doesn't necessarily come back into play later on. I thought the Undertaker haunting AJ was kind of unique. I'm still, I'll have to watch the match a time or two again to see whether or not I really like that or I didn't. I thought that was a nice callback to the Boneyard match. I thought that was a nice way to maybe hint that these two will meet again, which I'd love to see them fight in a traditional ring. But yeah, there were all sorts of these little callbacks. Shayna Baszler, I may have missed it. What happened to Shayna in the match. I don't remember her making it to the roof, but I don't remember her necessarily being taken out either. I very well might have missed it because, you know, what you were saying earlier, I was taking notes while watching and trying to make sense of everything. But I was expecting her to have more of a showing in this because I think Shayna is incredibly talented. I think she's someone who's legitimate. I think she's someone who her character doesn't need to be in slapstick, you know, to get over. But yeah, did you notice what happened with her? Was that just a loose end that was maybe missed in editing, or is it something that I missed while I was taking notes on the match?
Well, I wasn't taking notes, really. I was making mental notes. It was no point really trying to make too many notes on it. But I, too, lost track of her. So maybe I wasn't paying close enough attention, or maybe it ended up being a loose end. I don't know.
And in a case like that, maybe shame on us, but more likely maybe a shame on the writers for not making it a bigger point, because she is such an integral part of the women's division now, especially since coming up from NXT, longtime NXT women's champion, a true cage fighter. I feel like it was bad, a little bad that we didn't get more of a resolution for her character. We know Dana Brooke slipped and fell. We didn't see her after that, after she banged her head. We know Carmella was put through the table after the food fight by Nia Jax. I remember seeing Nia and Lacey and Asuka fighting for that briefcase on top of the roof. But yeah, no resolution there for Shayna. So I thought that was a little strange. I will go back and rewatch it. If there are fans out there who are watching this saying, oh, she fell down the toilet, remember? You know, shame on me again for missing that.
And me.
but that really didn't stand out. And I feel like, you know, Elias making that run in at the end, I felt like that was unnecessary. I felt Otis winning is kind of an interesting decision. Otis, I love. You know, of all the current talent, Otis is someone who I think has an incredibly bright future. I think he's a great talent in his current role. But he's already made it clear that if he was going to win, he was going to challenge for the tag team championships rather than the world championships. So, again, another way to really just undermine, you know, that world championship opportunity. It was, you know, again, just trying to get my head around all the things that happened. I did like the moment. I'd be interested in your thoughts. When the men and the women, when they first met, they were getting out of an elevator together early on in the match, and they just kind of looked at each other and then went in opposite directions. But then they actually had some interaction up with Paul Heyman on one of the higher floors. What did you think of Shayna Baszler putting out Rey Mysterio and then Nia and Otis sandwiching Rey? Do you think there was more opportunity there for more intergender action, or do you think it was just enough, not enough, or should they not have touched at all?
I think it was as far as WWE is willing to go. It was interesting. Again, I found it a little bit too comedic. Again, just for my taste. You know, right. Other people like watching wrestling because it is funny, right. And it can be funny. I like it when it's great drama and when it's solid characters and there's a believability to it. And, you know, once they pull the believability plug out for me, then I can't plug it back in until the next day. So once they unplugged it, it was gone. But, you know, it was fine for what it was. It didn't do anything for Ray. It didn't, well, I don't think it really did anything for anybody, but, you know, it was worth a brief, oh, wow, kind of chuckle.
Yeah.
That was about it. And I think that's as far, I don't see WWE. I could be wrong. I don't know. I'm not there. And I don't talk to my friends who are there about what's going on, so I have no idea what their thinking is. But I just can't see them going into intergender type matches.
Yeah, and I'm the same way. I'm not the biggest fan of intergender matches, although I've never mind little interactions like this. And this was one of the things that they hinted at that they actually delivered on in the buildup. The men and the women will be fighting at the same time. What will happen if they interact with one another? So again, I was kind of expecting at some point they would cross paths. We didn't see that. Were you expecting to see a big bump off the roof, you know, reminiscent of the Giant and Cobo Hall and whatnot? I'd heard rumors for a few days leading up to it. Honestly, I think that would have been, you know, probably a bit too much, but after seeing the match that we got, it's like, well, if they were going to go that far, why not do some sort of a spot off the roof or some sort of a, you know, spectacular sort of bump? I don't know. Were you expecting that? And were you kind of surprised they didn't do that after all the crazy stuff they did include?
Well, I'm not surprised that they didn't do it, but Ray got thrown off the top of the building, right? Was it Ray? Who got thrown off?
See, now, again, maybe I was just taking notes and looking down at the wrong time. I did not see that happen. Did Ray actually get tossed off the roof?
Well, I'm not sure. Now I'm going to have to go back and watch it. This is driving me crazy. But I thought for sure two people got thrown off the roof.
Really? Okay. Now I know Baron Corbin was hinting that he was going to do that. He was going to see how far he could get Ray to fly. I didn't see that. I thought I saw him go out of the ring, but I didn't see them necessarily walk to the edge of the roof and toss Ray over. But again, I might have been looking down and taking notes. Eric, I think, again, maybe this is a shame on the writers, shame on us as viewers if we truly are missing this. But this is one of the things that going into this match, they had to be aware of. With so many moving parts, they were going to have to really make sure that certain things that happened, especially big things like this, would resonate. And if I didn't remember it, and if you can't remember in a match that just went off the air 10 minutes ago, did one person go off or did two people go off? Either we weren't paying attention or they didn't tell this story as well as they could have. Maybe it's a little bit of both. But yeah, I didn't see that.
All right, we'll both go back and look at it. Listen, Tom, since we don't have video here tonight, we're not giving everybody the full effect. Why don't we wrap this up? Because I'm out of stuff to talk about, to be honest with you. There just wasn't enough meat on this bone for me to chew on it much longer. So,
yeah, disappointingly.
let's wrap this one up. But let's talk early, maybe tomorrow or Tuesday, about our next show. And I think we've already got some good ideas, and we'll tease people more later on in the week. But I look forward to talking to you in the next day or two.
Absolutely. Sounds good, Eric. Take care.
All right. So long.